We have to create the right vibe, you know, the energy, and everybody at the organization has to feel so privileged to be here. It's no other way.
Thanks for listening to the Purely Arsenal podcast. Please follow us on Twitter at Purely Arsenal FP for all the latest Arsenal podcasts.
Welcome to another episode of a Purely Arsenal sit-down podcast. We're back, and Arsenal are back, and let's hope we can keep that way, mate. Neil Shah with me. How you doing, Neil?
Mate, I'm in a bit of a euphoric moment, mate. Amazing. Brilliant, isn't it?
Indulge in it, mate. Indulge in it. Well, you got to enjoy it, haven't you?
Apart from the ref, again, and VAR.
I've noted it down. This is the third thing we're going to go through. Because, well, it's chronological order, isn't it? But we've got And that's where I may touch on the Wolves game. Obviously, we were away for the week of getting knocked out of the Champions League and losing 3 points to Villa. A pretty devastating week, I think it's fair to say. And at that point, I think all Arsenal fans were probably pretty pessimistic and felt, you know, the season could very well sort of fizzle out, and a bit like it did last season. And, you know, going into the Wolf game, I know we were all very, very nervous, and we managed to come through that pretty comfortably, I would say, even though, you know, we left it till late to get the second goal. And then this one was obviously a big one because Chelsea have been playing pretty well recently. Obviously, they lost narrowly to City in the semi-final, a little bit unlucky from what I saw in that. They probably should have been far ahead from City by the time City had scored. So we knew it was a tough task. I mean, they had a few players out. It's fair to mention they had Cole Palmer out, who's probably their best player this season, and they're right back out, Gusto. But they just replaced them with more expensive players. So let's not act like it was anything really crazy on their part. No one seems to like to talk about the players we've had out all season. Right, one just put in one top corner after about 3 minutes for the under-21s the other night. But what we did see, Neil, was the return, which we've been talking about a lot on the text over the last couple of weeks, certainly after Wolves, when he came on and had a great 15-minute cameo. He looked kind of like the Thomas Partey of old. I think we're all going, maybe now is the time to start Thomas Partey. And it was really interesting to see Mikel Arteta's quotes on him after the game. I don't know about you, but I sort of read a lot of his quotes. And he said, "We thought it was a really good game for him to come back. He looks like he's found his rhythm. He's trained really well over the last few days." So, and the way Chelsea set up, he says the players that they have and the way they attack especially, we believe it was the right call to make. It makes you wonder if it's been built into this, or maybe it's just the fact that he started to see Thomas Partey come back to his old self in training. It could well be that. Whatever it is, Neil, it was definitely the right call, because I thought he was absolutely terrific. And the other addition we saw, obviously, was Tomiyasu, who came in as well, which was expected, I think, especially if we thought Cole Palmer was playing on the right wing. It was definitely expected, but that made a lot of sense. But Neil, happy to see Thomas Partey back in the side. It's our, you know, Thomas Partey, Odegaard, Rice. I mean, it's crazy to think it, but that's all we were talking about in the summer, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was ecstatic. I just thought we saw a little bit of him in against, you know, for the Wolves game, 10 minutes. I think it was 10-15 minutes, and I thought he looked really sharp. He looked good, and he awakened an already fairly good Rice in that game, but he just gave Rice unlocked something more in Rice. I don't know. He took him to a different level, and I thought having him there with him in that partnership or threesome with Odegaard as well, of course, in midfield, I thought that would be a really clever thing to do for a team like Chelsea, where, you know, you know what Chelsea are like. I mean, they haven't been the best this season, but they just started coming to a little bit of form just as they were about to play us, which is typical, of course. Everyone always likes to turn into world champions when they play us. And I thought, well, this could be the perfect countermeasure, if you like. And that was nothing against the likes of Jorginho, who's been playing quite a lot. I think Jorginho's been a tremendous player for us. I just thought that Partey might give something else to that midfield and actually allow Rice a little bit more freedom going up front and progressing a little bit further up the pitch. And that proved to be the case. And I think it was Michael's pod, I literally pretty much... he asked about what we think we should do, and along with Partey, I said the front three of Trossard, Saka, and Havertz. And I just thought that that would be a good combination. Maybe I just got a bit lucky and a bit fluky with it, but it turned out to be that's what he did. And I thought seeing him against Chelsea, you know, he was, even as early as the first few minutes, he already took an active role. He just is clean, clever. You described him as smooth. I think that's right. He's got this. I think we've been very good this season anyway, because otherwise we wouldn't be where we are. The midfield has been purring. We lost a little bit against obviously those two games, Villa and Bayern, but I think we've regained it very, very quickly. And I just feel that when he's in this form, as good as Rice is, Jack, I think he's one of the best in the Prem in that position. I think he's so solid, so smooth, as you say, so dominant. And it's like he controls not just his position, but almost like the whole of the middle of the park. He's just a huge, huge player. He's almost effortless. He's a bit like what we describe Saliba. He's very silky, very smooth, very kind of, he doesn't get flustered. He's just in control. And I feel that a little bit about Partey as well. And even for the very first goal, he was involved in the passage of a nice little neat touch. I think he's collected it from Havertz, but it was a straight first one-touch ball going forward. Yeah, that's right. And I think that set
he's so good at that. Moment.
Exactly. And that's the big part of what he was doing. I was so happy that he's there. And I'm going to say it now, Jack. I want him to start against Tottenham. I think he'll be perfect for them. You won't remember when which game was it where he scored that great goal against them very early on? I can't remember which season that was. Was
it last season? It was the start of last season.
Yeah. So there you go.
Was it at the start? I think it might have been. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Top corner sets 1-0 up. Yeah.
Brilliant goal, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was fantastic. He did it one more time that season. I think against Forest later on in the season.
That's
it. Yeah. And then, of course, away, he had the volley that shattered the post. That was when we were flying, what we really were. But I think, yeah, I was kind of thinking after the game, I was like, what is different about Thomas Partey to Jorginho? Because 2-3 weeks ago on here, even maybe a little bit longer, but we're talking about Jorginho being the head of the pecking order because we can't trust Partey yet. Fitness isn't there and Jorginho's been so good. And then you get to that Bayern home game and our midfield got really nullified. And since then, you've started to see, well, we started to transition back to Rice and Havertz a little bit and things like that. And obviously each game state, like Mikel Arteta said after the game, each game state is going to acquire something different. It's good to have these options. And I think he did mention, you know, we've missed him so much and he loves everything about this midfield three, but he's given other players opportunities to be in that sixth role and Havertz to be in the eighth role. It is quite incredible though, from a fan's perspective, to think last season when we were on that amazing run where we were record-breaking points total, Thomas Partey was the key component to it, probably. He won top three. And the other thing was, the only time we actually dropped points within that time frame was when Thomas Partey wasn't playing, like at Old Trafford, for example. So to think we've gone through all of this season where Thomas Partey has played, I think he started, this might have been his third start of the season, somewhere around that. That is quite incredible. And it's been forgotten, I think. Not amongst us, but amongst sort of media. It's been absolutely forgotten because what we've lost there is an absolute pivotal part of our team. And it doesn't, when you don't recognise it, no one mentions it. But that is quite incredible. I think what you saw was he just likes to play those forward passes a bit sooner, take one less touch, move the ball a little bit quicker. And he's so smooth at doing it. Maybe the detrimental effect of that is you're a little bit more vulnerable defensively, maybe every now and then. Every now and then those passes don't come off and the other team can transition on you if he gives it away and whatnot. And we've seen that with Thomas Partey. I mean, I saw before the game, they said this is the first game the midfield three have started since the Community Shield. And I thought back to it and I thought, yeah, we were brilliant in the Community Shield. But at the same time, Thomas Partey made two errors and they was the main two chances that Man City had. It was Rodri in the first half and Cole Palmer's goal in the second half. So it's kind of like, which way do you go with it? But you're right. When he's at his best, I don't think there's anyone better in the league. I really don't at the six. And this looked like he was not his best, obviously fitness and stuff like that, but he looked like he was getting close to it. From the very first minute, you could just tell he looked like he was ready to play. And whatever Mikel Arteta has done in delaying it, hopefully it's the right time. I completely agree with you about Sunday. The only thing about that, Neil, is fitness. Is he recovered in time? Is he ready? I think he played 72 minutes today. That doesn't sound like a lot, but for Thomas Partey, we know you know, you've got to think about that, right? But like you said, I think, I mean, he's in massive contention. He has to be. I thought he was up there with being man of the match almost until, you know, he came off and, you're just, Odegaard just is unbelievable. So it's just really hard to judge. But I'm sure you're going to talk about Ben White and things like that. But we start the game, Neil. I'm a little bit nervous. Obviously, we mentioned that Chelsea had a few players out. But Chelsea are the fourth most expected points team in the league this season. So when you look at expected points, and you know me, I don't love data, but I do love the XG, expected points, and expected goals data. I love all that stuff because I've noticed over the last few years it kind of follows suit pretty much. And if you look at it, they are right there, fourth alongside Newcastle, actually, surprisingly, for where they should be. And if you look at the top three, it's Arsenal, City, Liverpool, like right there. And so what he's saying is they are, it's fairness, Mikel Arteta was right, they aren't really in a position that their football is proven. And I knew there'd be quite a lot of trouble, I thought there would be, because they do attack quite well, but they are defensively really vulnerable. The way we started, Neil, the first chance, first goal so crucial for us as well, you know. And what a goal it was as well. And Trossard, he's done the exact reverse of his stats from last year. He got one goal and 10 assists last year. He's got 10 goals and one assist this season. I mean, he's arguably becoming our first choice left winger, at least at this point in time, isn't he?
Unfortunately, because I'm a big Martinelli fan, I have to agree. Yeah, he is. But I like Trossard, love Trossard as well. So I used to say at the time, you know, it's probably he's good, better coming on as an impact sub. But actually, Trossard is a player that I find he's never moaned about any of his situations. He's a very he comes across as a true professional, and he just gets on with it. And he always seems to make an impact, doesn't he, Jack? No matter what the situation is and what the circumstance is and whether we're winning, whether we're losing, whether we're drawing, he'll always come on and you know that you're going to get something with him. And just a quick one on Martinelli. I don't know quite what's going on with him, whether it's just a loss of confidence, a loss of form, or whether that injury had more of an impact than maybe we thought at first. But even yesterday, just quickly jumping ahead when he came on, he had two really great chances and he's just not himself. And I'm sure if that had been the Martinelli at the start of the season, he would have knocked those in.
That second one to go in, did
you? Oh, gosh, yeah. And I think he needs it, doesn't he? He just needs a goal just to get him back, just to reset him again into the right way. But so I'm not sure. But yeah, so for that reason, now I think Trossard has to be the first choice over him. He just has to be. Now, Trossard is, let me just say that Rice, that was, again, look, an example of the inclusion of Partey, who was up there with him, running, charging through, and it was a great assist, wasn't it, as well? And Trossard's finish was, let's say, classified as a bit lucky. Again, we've got the idiots who love to keep on that lovely narrative with us, which it gets so boring. Oh, so lucky. Yeah, all right. The argument is there that, you know, a goalkeeper letting in a goal which is such a tight angle at the near post, it really should do better. But Trossard, that shot was so accurate, so on point and so powerful and quick. I don't think the goalkeeper could have done much else than what he did. It was just too fast. And to hit it with such power and such accuracy is not an easy thing. You know, people might think that was quite an easy finish. It wasn't. I think there was a lot of skill there. And it was like a flash. I mean, me watching it, I was like, oh, what? What? We scored. I just couldn't at the moment. I was like, how
I thought
it
hit the side netting. I don't know if
you
did.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I didn't celebrate.
Exactly that. But I thought it was so fast and just what we needed. Exactly what we needed. I think at Chelsea, we had to hit them hard. It had to hit them fast and start with great intensity. And that's what we did. And then, Jack, you know what? That gave way to us playing some amazing football. Some of the attacking stuff and the forward play yesterday was so exquisite. Even I was like, my God, I've not seen that from us this season. It was just so one touch, so fast that completely bamboozled Chelsea. And I don't care what anyone says, that Chelsea were very depleted. They're now they're going about how, oh, they're the youngest team, da 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 da. Like, you know, Like, it's like, I said, yeah, maybe the youngest team, but also the most expensive. Yeah, and
by far.
And yeah, okay, they had that their top scorer out and their main man out, but that Jackson's a really quick player as well. And
I think he's good, yeah. If he could finish.
Yes.
He's a handful.
And they had chances, mate, as well. They had some chances. They just didn't finish them. And how many times have we been found wanting like that? We've had some chances. We've created not a lot, yeah, but you know, they troubled us 2 or 3 times going forward. Yeah. And of course, Raya, just a quick mention just before I finish, Raya, another, I thought, a great show from him. You know, he saved us a couple of times. He's so, I thought, as well with the Wolves game as well, he's just so calm with his play. He gives it something completely different to what Ramsdale. I'm totally on board with him now, as I said a few pods ago. I think he's brilliant. And I think, I could be wrong, I'm not sure whether Pickford can catch him. I think he might have already secured the golden glove.
I believe club. I was wrong and with that tweet. I think Pickford can.
He still can, but he's almost
would have
there,
to
right?
get a clean sheet in every game, though. Pickford would. I believe Pickford would have to get a clean sheet. He's got, we're like 4 ahead and he's got 5 games left, something like that. So I think I got that wrong on the tweet because I followed other people's tweet.
No, that's fine, Jack. But at the end of the day, it's going to be a tough ask for Pickford now, right? To do that.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So, but with that, he didn't start at the start of the season. I don't know when he came in. Was it the fifth game he came in?
The game after the Man United game, which was Everton away, actually.
Okay. Then, of course, you've got to remember, he didn't play for the 2 Brentford games either. So
good point. I didn't put that down. Yeah, so he's missed half a dozen games.
Right. So he's still more or less there, right? It's an incredible achievement. Incredible achievement. Fully deserved. And 100% he is our number one. And I think that really relieves us that we do need to get a goalkeeper in the summer, but that'll be definitely a number two. We don't need a number one now. He is definitely our number one. Well deserved. So I just wanted to mention that very, very quickly. So, no, great first goal. It set us on our way, and the conductor for those 45 minutes, although we didn't score another goal. My God, has he got 8 eyes? I don't want to compare it to Bergkamp, but Jesus Christ. Jack, even Ali McCoist, it was so annoying yesterday on the commentary. Because
I heard you tweeting about it, so I texted him
back. Oh, my God, that goal was lucky. Oh, and what a save by the Chelsea goalkeeper. A save? Bloody balls kicked his blooming chest. He didn't do anything, did he?
Why does he dislike us so much? Who did he play for? He didn't play for anyone in England, did he?
No, even to be fair, right?
People just hate us, don't they? Left, right, and centre.
There's nothing new about it, right? But I have to say, look, let me play devil's advocate just a little bit, donating for it. I don't want people saying, oh, you're a big Andy McCoy's fan. No, I'm not. All I'm saying is, although he does say that Bergkamp's goal against Newcastle was a fluke, and it's like basically trying to say the same thing again about White's goal, which a bit tongue-in-cheek. But anyway, I've got to give him one thing. The last 2 times I've heard him about us, he does drool all over Odegaard. I have to say that.
Yeah.
He is like, Odegaard, oh my God, he's just unreal. And he did give Odegaard man of the match as well yesterday. And Jack, the guy is just ridiculous.
Yeah, most touches, he created 8 clear-cut chances. Most touches, most passes, most chances created 8, which is the most he has ever created in any Premier League game. So the frustration always for me, especially last season, even when he was scoring 15, was that people weren't realising how great a creator he was because we weren't putting him away. And I think he was getting very unlucky on those stats. Now those stats are much more even. He's 8 assists, 8 goals. And I like that in the sense that he is such a good creator. I mean, even in this game, there's some chances that some black balls he laid on for Saka and Havertz, and you just watched it and you went, oh my gosh, he must sometimes just be scratching his head thinking, I could be walking away with a hat trick of assists in every game, minimum. He got 2 this game. And one of them was, we'll get to it. The third goal was just an incredible, incredible pass from deep. I mean, unbelievable. But like you said, the guy is unbelievable. I've got no real further words. You know me, I thought he was our best player when we signed him on loan. That was, he wasn't even our player at that point. And his data was unbelievable then. He had no assists because we sucked. But his data said he was the second best assist maker other than De Bruyne in the league. And no one would listen. I said, I'm telling you, this guy, he's unbelievable. We just need to get better. We're ready to build around him somehow. And amazingly, that's what Arteta's done and made him the captain, and no one's arguing with that anymore, are they really? But no, you're absolutely spot on. But interesting what you said on Trossard. I watched it again. You were absolutely right. Partey was the one that released the ball to Rice very quick, very early. And when I watched Trossard, I think he is our best finisher. I think he is actually our best finisher at the club. And the great thing about Trossard is inside the box, like you saw against Wolves, left or right foot, he'll just hit it, and he'll hit it, and he'll get it on target. And sometimes I feel like some of our other players, Jesus, for example, take that extra touch. Even right now, Martinelli, take that extra touch. Would he have hit it as early as Trossard did there, Martinelli, at this point in his sort of confidence? I don't think he would. I think he might be cut inside or cut back, and the chance would go away. Trossard just saw an opening and said, I'm hitting it hard at the moment. I'll see where it goes. Perfect. That's exactly what you want to do. But after that, Neil, I would say there was a 20-minute period where I felt like it got a little bit chaotic and Chelsea came back into the game a little bit. Before we get to that, and there are a couple of chances, I don't know exactly the minute that it came up in because this highlight reel is deciding to remove it, but I'm not going to remove it. But we had 2-in-2 games here. Kilman, dreadful tackle. This one's worse because he's not even remotely close to the ball when it's even higher, and basically, I don't know how it doesn't break Tomiyasu's leg, to be honest, because his ankle just rolls underneath him. My issue with this, Neil, is not that they don't give the red card, it's that they don't review it for the red card and how that's not being talked to him. And that's where I get really sort of sceptical about what is going on in that VAR room. How is anyone not going, hold on a minute, you need to have a look at this one. And the problem with this, Neil, is at 1-0, their biggest danger was Nicholas Jackson. Like, he kind of hit the post from a deflection from Saliba. He went up for a free header, but it hit his hand. But easily, Neil, one of those can pop in the net, 1-1, and it's a different game altogether. And he shouldn't be on the pitch. I mean, it's disgraceful, I think, these two decisions.
Jack, I was livid because we've seen it happen to poor Diaby, Eduardo, Ramsey. And it brought it all back. And it happened, started not with this game, but the one against Wolves with Kilman. And Kilman could have, you know, seriously injured Kai, could have potentially ended his career. And the same thing again we see in the very next game with Tomiyasu. And you're just like scratching your head thinking, what is going on with the officials? What is going on with the ref? Can you not see nothing? I think going back to the Wolves game very quickly, Rice then bundled the player over and he got carded. I think he actually did that to stop the game because he knew the ref wasn't doing anything. He wouldn't have known the extent of Kai's injury as his co-player, as his colleague. And I think he actually did it. He went and did that. I mean, I could be wrong, but that's what it looked like to me because he wanted the ref to stop the game and he gets carded himself for it. And then you see it in the very next game. Jack, that was a leg breaker. There is no two ways about it. His leg is caught in the turf, and it could have. I don't know how he got away with that. I think Tomiyasu is so lucky, and the fact that he managed to carry on, you know, thank God. I hope he is all right for me. I'm sure he is. I don't think he'll carry on.
Sometimes it can.
No, you're right. You're right. So we don't know yet. But I think it happened in the 20th minute. I was rewatching it. I was so upset yesterday by it. I put a tweet up, and then you get the idiots going, well, what about the tackle on that? Gabriel makes that's your third goal. This is from an Arsenal fan. I said, what are you talking about? What planet are you on? You can't even compare the two. Oh, it's all right.
It's coming together of bodies.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and it's not like, it's not doing, endangering his career, is it? Is they're just pulling each other, or Gabriel might be pulling each other down and vice versa. How can you compare them?
If you want to be objective.
An Arsenal fan.
Yeah, I know Arsenal fans, of course, we look at it from our perspective. Yeah, objectively, though. Objectively, we are top of the fair play league. The only red card I believe we've had this season, we had two. Fabio Vieira's one was a 3-match ban. It was a silly tackle. And it was the most ridiculous red card given to Tomiyasu. So we should only have one. Now, in fairness, the one that we could have had was Eddie Nketiah in the home leg against Tottenham where he went through Vicario. That's the only one that I looked at and went, he got away with that one a little bit. Beyond that, I mean, some of the decisions we've had against us, not just on red cards, I'm talking like penalties that we didn't get and things like that, they've been unbelievable. And the reason it's not talked about, one, we win the game. And I think Arsenal fans are so good at talking about it when we don't win it. But I feel like when we do win it, you still need to talk about these things because, you know, you know, we'll do it. Liverpool fans will do it. You know, they'll do it. City fans will do it. They'll do it, and they'll tag. So that's why I always make sure I tag the PGML, talk about these decisions, even when we're winning the games, because I feel like there's a lot that have gone against us, and I feel like, you know, I don't want people saying, you know, we've been favoured at all here. There, we haven't. We get a lot of decisions, really poor ones, coming against us. But you're absolutely right on that one. Bryce was just trying to stop the game. Absolutely ridiculous that it didn't get stopped for that tackle. Just unbelievable. But like you said on this one, my biggest annoyance was every time Jackson got the ball after that, and he looked so dangerous, to be fair, in that period, I mean.
Yeah.
Well, I think we got a real good handle of him in the second half, to be honest. Mm. I know he had one chance, but he had a chance when it was like 5-0 or something. And but that was so frustrating because I was like, he shouldn't be on the pitch here. He just shouldn't be anywhere. Should have been off straight away. It should be a quick decision. Very frustrating, Neil. Very, very frustrating. But, well, I mean, talk about that a little bit more if you want. But what do you think about the... That wasn't the reason for our sort of sloppiness. And Mikel Arteta alluded to it at the end of the game. He said, we just got a little sloppy. He kept losing the ball in silly areas and forcing it maybe too much, maybe trying to get that second a bit too quickly. I don't know what it was. But we were just losing the ball a little bit sloppy at the back. Saliba, Gabriel positionally maybe a little bit off for a little bit of time. Tomiyasu, I thought in that period, got done once or twice, but and that might be a little bit of rustiness on Tomiyasu. He's not played that much, has he?
No.
Do you think there's anything more than that, or...?
It's hard to tell. I'm going to be honest, Jack. I can't... I think it sounds really stupid, but I've kind of put that out of my mind because the rest of the game is so great.
Yeah.
And to be honest, despite that... Right, Tomiyasu, I can say, Tomiyasu has got to be down to rustiness. He's got to be. He hasn't played anything, has he? What's he done? He's hardly had any minutes. So you can kind of excuse him for it. And maybe it could have been also the inclusion of the party. It may have, although it was so good, at the same time, it might have unbalanced things slightly because we've not been used to him, have we? We've hardly had him all season. So it could be down to that, a little bit of that. You know, that Gabriel and Saliba are not used to having him in front of them. Haven't had all season. They've had Jorginho there or Rice there. So it could be that, but I'm scratching my head on it. I don't know what the reason is. It could be a little bit of anxiety, a little bit of nerves, you know, the day. Although we've done so well against Wolves and managed to get through that, Chelsea's still a big team, isn't it? They're not the team that they were a few years ago. We were struggling against them. They were thumping us. But, you know, I still think there may have been a bit of anxiety and nerves there. A bit of tension. It's going to be. We've got so much pressure on us, Jack. We know for a fact that we cannot slip up now at all. A draw might as well be a loss because we know how good City and all Liverpool are and can be. So it could be a bit of that, but it's hard to say. And just on that, although you're right that there was a bit of God, what are we doing? What kind of ball was that? What are we making these silly mistakes for? Equally, we created a hell of a lot of chances.
We did.
Other than the goal. You know, and again, I think Odegaard was instrumental. And this is the only thing that concerns me. If we are going to talk about concerns, I still think, although we scored 5, which is, and I feel stupid me saying it, we could have scored a hell of a lot more, Jack. Mm-hmm. And we've got to be putting at least half of those chances, at least on target or making the goalkeeper work. I sometimes feel that the wrong decision is made. And look, Kai Havertz was brilliant yesterday. Of course he was. Got a brace. But in the first half, I think it was, there was 2 chances. One where, and he did the opposite of each time, one where he should have crossed it or passed it to the other player. It was Trossard for the first one. He didn't, and he went for a shot. And on the second occasion, where he went to pass it for the first one and when he should have shot, and then it was the other way around. The second occasion, he should have been more selfish. He should have
given it to Odegaard, didn't he?
And yeah.
Whatever, yeah. It took the extra touch as well.
Yeah, I'm getting my words. But basically,
just a little bit of that indecision.
Yes.
A little indecision.
Thank you. That's the word I'm looking for. Indecisiveness. Yeah.
And that lack of ability to be truly critical when you get less chances worries you. And I agree. But the good thing about this, and I'm not saying it's hopefully it is a pattern, but when we started hitting teams for 4 and 5 a month or two ago, it came in clusters, you know, that's when the goal difference thing changed and everything. So what really I like about these players, because I don't think Kai Havertz or Jesus is ever going to be super clinical. They're just not those type of players. They're not, you know, they don't have that knack for finishing. It's just something, you know, you build in your sort of innately got, you know, Ian Wright, something like that. But what I like is that if they're super confident, then they're able to get more chances, and that's going to create more. When you see people like Odegaard just create, and I thought even Saka today, when he wasn't heavily involved, I think he got one assist, but he had so many key passes. I think he had 5, 6, 7, but he had five key passes. He created big chances for us as well. And again, you know, even though he wasn't on the goal scoring sheet, I felt like he in the last two games has been back to his best. You saw late on against Wolves, he's going past 2 or 3, looks fit again, you know. And so I agree with you. You definitely want to be a little bit. And at that point, I was getting as frustrated as I'm sure you were in not finishing our chances. But at the same time, in the back of my head, I'm like, okay, I had that little chance to Cucurella that Ben White just stood tall to and just blocked it. Right, it was going straight in, wasn't it? And then obviously, I think it was Enzo Fernandez that just put it just wide for the post. So they had a few chances themselves. And like I said, they are the fourth most creative team in the league. So I guess you've got to expect that they create more than Villa over the course of the season. So you've got to expect that you may be a little bit vulnerable at times. But what I liked about it is not that we were willing to be vulnerable, but we were willing to open up fully going forwards and not worry so much about control and focus more on trying to dominate the other team. And I thought that was really good. And when we get like that and we get a bit more free flowing and less thinking time, we tend to start to put the ball back in the net. And I think that's what really happened after the second goal, because we came out in the second half, we started really fast on the front foot. I think Havertz had one early on from an unbelievable ball from Odegaard again, and he ran through and it wasn't unbelievable, and it hit into the goalkeeper, and I was just shouting. I was like, just lift it, which is exactly what he did for the third one. Surprisingly,
what a ball, Jackie. Yeah. Four defenders he just destroyed in one just move.
Unreal balls. And yeah, his chance creation at the moment is just insane. And the types of passes he's making as well, inside, outside of his foot, passes you don't even see until the player's running. Just really, really fantastic passes.
Very quickly, though, the irony is, this is something Michael came up with. I didn't even know this. It was his first assist at home. I didn't know that.
Nah.
First assist. Yeah. Everything's done, but that's the thing. What you're just saying: how many chances do we miss? Because if we weren't, it's not because of him. He's creating, but that's his actual first assist at home this season. I didn't know that. It's bad, isn't it?
Mental, absolutely mental. I did not know that either. That's incredible. But then it's the bit of the Ben White Havertz show, really, in the second half, really. Which is incredible. I mean, that's the Chelsea, I think, going into this game, if they weren't going to, you know, win it, they just didn't want Havertz to score. So that was obviously something we absolutely love. But the second one, it's a little bit scrappy, you know, in the box, pop a bit ping pong a little bit. And then, but White puts it away. A lovely finish. I mean, Ben White's got 4 goals, 4 assists now this season, more than Trent Alexander-Arnold. Who's Liverpool's, you know, most creative talent in the world. He is fantastic going forward, Trent Alexander-Arnold. My point there, though, is I think he's been the best right back in the league this season, because Ben White offers so much more. Do you know what I mean? I mean, everyone goes, oh yeah, why do we care about, all I hear from Liverpool fans, why do we care about his defensive numbers, because he's absolutely fantastic going forward? I'm like, well, he's not that great this season according to the stats. You know, he's not creating that much and scoring that many. I know he's had a few less games than Ben White, but Ben White offers so much, I think, balance, because defensively he's really good. His energy is so good. Touchwood, he's really available. Fitness is at elite levels. You know, oftentimes he's still going late into games. He was fantastic against Wolves as well. And I thought he was fantastic, and he deserved his 2 goals now, wouldn't he?
Yeah, Ben White is the unsung hero for the defence, I think. You know, we talk a lot about Gabriel, we talk a lot about Saliba, and then we're always talking about the left back position, not maybe because they're brilliant at it, but because who do we play? And what's Zinchenko gets the criticism for not being able to defend, but he's good attacking wise. And then we've got Gabriel, who's young, and now he's got like Tomiyasu. So I think Ben White's kind of overlooked a little bit in all the discussions. And I think he's got better since that break. Since that break that we went on, or the players had and enjoyed, he's just been phenomenal this calendar year, hasn't he? And I think he's regained that partnership, or he has that triangle he has with Odegaard and Saka for sure. I think Saka, he helped Saka a lot yesterday in particular, because my favourite player, not Rella, you know what I mean. Can't repeat that on this show. I really don't like him. I really don't. There's something about that player.
He's not right in the head, though, is he? He's not right in the head. Did you see the ball that went out for the throw-in in the first half? And he lost it. He got booked for it, I think. and he he absolutely lost it. And when they zoomed in on it, he knocked the ball out with his own arm. So it was a handball, but they gave it as a throw in to us. Yes. And he loses it with the ref. I'm like, you're not right in the head because you knocked that ball out with your arm and you're upset that we got a throw in for it.
Yeah.
He's just gone. And did you see him? I hope you saw his reaction to Ben White's first goal. If you didn't, I'll send you it right now. But it's absolutely brilliant. And
comical.
Yeah, yeah, it's brilliant. And he's lucky he didn't get sent off, to be honest, because he was fouling Saka all game, just like he did in the home game.
Absolutely.
And they booked him in the home game. Do you remember at Chelsea? In this game, they finally booked him sometime in the first half, and he went off on a tangent and went crazy again.
Yes.
But he, I agree with you. He's not all there, though. There's something not right with him. He's just
I think, you know, when you guys talk a lot about transfers and speculation, who we get, and I think his name came to mind. I was like, no way, not him. I do not want him in an Arsenal shirt ever. No. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's a personal thing with me. I just do not like him. I don't see him flopping around when he's running around. I just don't like him. I don't know.
He's very annoying.
Yeah, it's just annoying. Yeah, it's one of those. But I think he was there to give Saka a hell of a problem yesterday. And what I liked about White was there almost like so many overlaps getting behind him and really assisting. And I think that completely upset whatever Cucurella had in his mind or what the manager had in his mind for him to do to Saka. So I think he was the perfect foil for Saka yesterday. Yeah. Really helped him out a lot. And I'm just so delighted that he got on the score sheet because he's a very quiet player. You see him in the interviews. He's almost comical being interviewed. Even yesterday, he's like, And it's just great to watch him. It's something about the guy that I love. And I'm just so glad that he managed to... People were talking about him for a change, if that makes sense. I think he deserves a little bit of the spotlight. But it was great. I mean, I think that first goal was from a corner, wasn't it? It was left for...
Yes.
From a corner. And it was ping-pong, as you said, around. I think Declan Rice then finally had the shot, which went...
Blocked and went over to him, yeah.
And just, he was there at the right place at the right time. Bang, no problem. And that was actually quite a good finish.
Yeah, it was lovely on his left foot.
Yeah, we talked about hesitation maybe from Jesus Martinelli, even Odegaard at times taking that one touch too many. He was just like, bang, straight in.
Yeah.
No questions asked. Maybe sometimes we could think about having him as a number nine. Who cares? Who knows? But he's done a great job. You know, he was brought in to be a centre-back, Jack. That's what we brought him.
Yeah.
And he slotted in into that right-back role unbelievably well. Great down the flank, gives teams problems when he's on song, and I think he's been amazing this season. And you're right, I think you might have said that during the game, you know, arguably he could be man of the match. This is the thing I love about
James was pushing for it too, yeah.
Yes, and I think that's the wonderful thing. Even yesterday, you think about at the end of the game, who could be man of the match? You could have four or five players in contention.
Yeah,
Rice done well, Havertz done well, White done well. Odegaard, who actually, I think, got it officially. I mean, there's just so many players that could have got it. And that is what makes... That is why where we are.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. But White was tremendous. And sorry, if you quickly fast forward to the fourth card, I know you don't like doing it like this. He meant that.
But did you see his comment afterwards? He was like, he went, oh, I'll let everyone else decide. And I was like, perfect. That's fair. What I hoped he did was what Mudrick tried to do in the first game and went, oh, yeah, no, I've been working on that. I've noticed their goalkeeper comes off the line a little bit. You know, stuff like that. Do you remember they said that? They tried to give Arteta that interview in the post game after the Chelsea draw at Chelsea. But what White noticed is a little bit what we noticed on the left side is Mudrick doesn't track. I mean, he doesn't know how to defend. He has no idea where to position his body. He's way off tactically for this level, which we couldn't notice from clips of him when we wanted to sign him, of course. He has some nice touches on the ball, Mudrick, but as soon as you go the other way, he doesn't, and Ben White just was like, I'm just going to keep overlapping, like you said, because no one's going to track me. And Cucurella doesn't know what to do when I do that because all he wants to do is get touch tight to Saka. But you can't get touch tight to Saka if the ball's not there, so you got to move. So, and then Saka freed up, and that's why I think Saka had a lot of joy. And we were really good at overloading. Whereas at Chelsea, away, we get to our away performances because it's something we're going to have to correct this weekend. But we went for that a little bit more of control and not necessarily dominate the other teams. And I don't think it's worked out for us in big away games this season. We've done that, but we've kind of gone to, you know, keep things tight and not concede, because I think sometimes you have to realise your quality, and our quality is to go and dominate teams, especially ones we know we're better for when we look at our team. But yeah, Ben White, yeah, I agree with you. He meant it. Well, either way, now, what a finish. I mean, it doesn't matter, does it really? I mean, it's an unbelievable finish. One of the goals of the season, if he did mean it. So yeah, I'm going to say he meant it, absolutely. But no, he's been brilliant. And that's what is one of the biggest credits you've got to give to Arteta, is he buys players that are so versatile. And if they've got the right character, they're able to do that. And look how quick Ben White transitioned. I mean, I know he had a year there, and now he's getting better there, but he literally was kind of shoved away from the centre-back because of how good Saliba is. And suddenly in a pre-season game, he just was like, well, I'm just going to... No issue with it. I'm just going to find my way into the 11 another way. Havertz, again, doing the same, right? You know, shifting from position to position, but it's such a great option for Arteta when he's got these players that can play in multiple positions and have a footballing brain. And that's what's really clever about Mikel Arteta. He knows how to find players that can play in more than one position. He loves to find those type of players as well. So Ben White's the epitome of that, really. But then it was, obviously, those two goals. But then the third and fifth goal were the Kai Havertz ones. And the finishes he didn't take in the first half were completely wiped out in the second half, Neil. And I have to say the third, well, unbelievable, but it was so fantastic to see what he did to Cucurella, I thought, on the third one, because he just pulls him to the floor and drops him to his face. And he's so strong there as well. It's fantastic. But two great goals, Neil.
Which was your favourite goal of the five?
Oh, God, a good question. Which one? I'm trying to remember them all now. I think as a team move, I really liked... Well, I did love the third one for the goal, but I think the fifth one was the one where he hit off the post. I really like that, because it was not a typical Havertz. I mean, it was very
vertical
finish.
That was the fourth one.
Sorry, Ben White was the fifth one. Fourth one. I liked the fourth one because I loved the way he moved and shifted his body, and it wasn't something I typically would have thought of from Havertz. So I liked that a lot. But I think they were all, you know,
If you had to ask me, I'd say the third, because I think that pass from Odegaard.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Oh, my God. That just summed up his whole game, that one pass. And I'm not going to go dwell on the fact that it started from Gabriel, you know, getting on the floor with that other guy, because then people are just going to use that as an excuse to say, well, that shouldn't have been allowed. Because even McCoy's saying, oh, that was a foul straight away. So, oh, it was a foul. It was a great goal. It was a foul. Oh, God, please shut up. Let's enjoy our moment. Gosh, because that was absolutely pinpoint. Bergkamp's probably one of the greatest players, if not the greatest player I've ever seen on TV and live. I think Bergkamp is in a world of his own. He's God for me, Bergkamp. But there is some things that Odegaard is starting to do which reminds me of Bergkamp a lot. He's got eight eyes, Jack. His vision is just ridiculous. It's like he just can see a pass before it happens, and that is exactly what Bergkamp used to be. They used to talk about Bergkamp, his fellow players, that he sees things that no one else does. It's almost like even before it happens, that he just instinctively knows where players are going to be. And Odegaard's got so much about that with him as well. And to pick that out, it was so perfect. But let's not take any credit away from Kai here, because Kai still had a lot of work to do. And this is what I've always liked about him. When he first came on, I said, he's strong. He reminds me a little bit of Giroud. He's very strong. It's difficult to, like, you know, brush aside. And he really used his strength and his presence to hold Cucurella at bay, to take control of that ball, which he had to do. And that was a great finish as well. He had everything about it. He had to lift it over the keeper. Great. But it was a powerful shot as well. At first, I thought it was going over. When I first saw it, I thought, oh, no, he's hit it over, isn't he? And bang, the back of the net just swelled up. I thought, oh, my God, what a goal. I probably went most mad for that one. Out of all of them, yeah. I was...
It's unbelievable striker play, really. Because it's a really good sort of learning point for strikers, because the way he takes the first touch and the second touch to keep it away from Cucurella, but yet still allow him to get a shot off. You know, if he took that touch too much in front of him, Cucurella's going to get back across, but he keeps his body between the player and the ball, and that's what you're taught to do. And but he does it so effectively, while Cucurella is, you know, he's a fast player, he's running in on him, but he just uses his body to hold him off, and he just does it for enough time to get a shot away, and it's a fantastic finisher. Yeah, I mean, it's great. On Odegaard, Neil, all he's lacking is winning things. And then suddenly, because for me, even Bergkamp's amazing, like you said, but people try, I can't take the Ozil comparison seriously because he does so much more for the team. You know, Ozil, you used to watch games and you'd be like, he's created a goal, doesn't need to do anything more. And the bad thing about that,
luxury player,
Ozil always felt all that as well. If he created a couple of goals, he'd just sit there and he'd roam about. And like he was Messi. Well, Mesut Ozil wasn't Messi. He was nowhere near Messi. Odegaard plays like, you know, he's the newcomer of the team and he's trying to prove himself from day one in every game, right? He presses from the front. He leads the team. He tracks back, right? He can drop deep. He can go high. He does more for the team than Mesut Ozil. To be honest, I think he does more for the team in that sense than Dennis Bergkamp ever did. And that's saying something, but I really do in a collective team sense. I do think the only difference there was it was a different type of football when Bergkamp was there. It was a 4-4-2 system. He was second striker. He didn't have as much responsibility, maybe. So that would be the pass I'd give to Bergkamp there. It was a different role. But I'm not giving no passes to Mesut Ozil. He must be joking. So, yeah, I think Martin Odegaard's on another planet to him, to be honest. You know, people always go to me, oh, but you know, I don't care what anyone did for Real Madrid, okay? We don't talk about what Martin Odegaard did for Real Madrid, do we? So, you know, I mean, that's why would he do any different?
It's all about what happens with us.
Exactly. That's what it's all about. And he was man of the match for me. I mean, when you look at those stats, I mean, how can he not be? He was just unbelievable. But on the ball, he's just mesmeric to watch. He's just one of those players that you just dream of watching live as much as possible. I mean, that's the way he plays. I think it's just fantastic to watch. When you've got commentators that seem to despise us still talking him up, that's how good he is, I guess. But
yeah.
But yeah, it was fantastic. What did you think? Obviously, for it, but we have to say, this was just pretty funny at this point, Neil. I mean, you know, you get to 4 or 5-0 and I'm sitting in my classroom and I'm just giggling. Like, because let's face it, Chelsea, they are the scummiest team in the league. Like, if you look at everything, they are the worst of the worst of the worst, right? Well, in every category. And it is beautiful to watch where they're at now. I think I saw a Chelsea fan saying, oh, our fans don't deserve this. And I was like, you definitely do. You deserve this and worse more than any other fan base. No debate. No question about it. So it was really quite funny when it got to like the third and fourth and Havertz is very happy to celebrate more than I've ever seen him celebrate. And it was very, very funny. I mean, I guess we should just talk about their demise a little bit because they're mid-table. They're trying to talk up being in a Europa League conference spot or something. And that's going to be a success. Whereas at the start of the season, Pochettino, I have the quote somewhere where Pochettino said, our plan is to win the league. So what I do not want, we need to win today, not yesterday. He says, this is after a 1-1 draw against Dortmund in Chicago. We are going to try and win the Premier League. I'm not selling any smoke here. Chelsea has to try and win the title. Now, they're all going, oh, it'd be pretty good if you got the Europa League conference. Nah, I'm not buying it. You're the most expensive football team ever created and you're a disgrace. And the way the media doesn't talk about it because it's not us or even Liverpool, you know, if it was a proper big club with history, that is quite annoying to me. But it is pretty hilarious to watch them, isn't it?
It's hilarious, but it's annoying because I've not ever heard anyone say they're a team in crisis. We drop one place. Well, we lose to Aston Villa. Oh, look at them. Bottle jobs. Da-da-da-da-da. Can't do it. All that narrative starts, even as early and as recent as that. And we just get crucified. Oh, team in crisis. Oh, they can't even make top four. They're going to hit top six, top four, get fifth. They're a team in crisis. It's always bang, bang, bang. Let's have a go at Arsenal. Yet these guys spend million money like we, you know, you don't even think about. Oh, you know, over player after player after player, just throwing money at players, not even thinking about it, and nothing is said. You know, they can't even, they're a mid-table team, like you're saying. It's like, hang on a minute. They're the teams that they should be getting the heavy criticism, especially by the media, especially by the pundits, because they're the ones that are throwing millions of money at these players. They've got, they had, what, how many players on loan did they have at one time? They're just like, just for the sake of it, to even stop other teams from even having a go at getting the transfers in, just stupidness all around, and nothing said. It's like Pochettino, oh yeah, he did really well for Spurs, and he's going to turn it around for Chelsea. They're going to be a force. What's said about him? Nothing. Yeah, Arteta would get criticised. Wenger would get criticised. Even Unai Emery criticised because we weren't like winning things, you know, constantly, every blooming minute, you know, every day we weren't winning games. I'm sick of it. So for that reason, it was hilarious. And the other thing is getting that third goal really, really made me happy because, you know what, we've been like with a 2-0 lead. Even as bad as Chelsea, I thought, oh, no, we've got to get another one. And we sunk it. But, yeah, for Kai Havertz to do it after all the crap he's taken, all the Chelsea fans laughing at us for getting him, spending $65 million on a waste of space. Look at him now. Oh, yeah, I love it. It was fantastic.
It was. He's 11 goals, 5 assists in the league. And let's be honest, he's probably played 6 months or so at midfield. You know, he's had 33 appearances in the league, but I would argue maybe 10 max of those have been at striker. So that's a pretty good return already, and we're not done yet. So that's, you know, he's had a fantastic season. Absolutely no doubt since January he's possibly been our most informed player, actually, since certainly our most informed attacking player alongside Odegaard. They both really ran it from the front, actually, those two. And yeah, fantastic. I was really happy for him. John rarely FaceTimes me during a midweek game, especially when I'm at work. But if he is FaceTiming me while I'm watching the game, I know Kai Havertz has scored because he wants to wind me up about it. And he FaceTimed me, and about 3 minutes later, he FaceTimed me again. He went, he's scoring again. I was like, oh, that's funny. So very good. I hope he FaceTimes me a few more times this season because that'll mean something. So, it was a brilliant performance, total performance, really. Little, you know, hiccups. What did you think about the substitutions, Neil? I mean, we were able to rest players, maybe not as much as we maybe would have thought, but yes, you know, at 3-0, you can't. Sorry, a little stoppage on our end here on the pause. Oh, we come back. It was 3-0, and I think at the 72nd minute, we started to make some changes. Did you have any thoughts on that? I mean, I guess the biggest one to talk about is sort of the left back position at the moment. Kivior started against Wolves. A little bit of vulnerability there in the first half, but I thought he sort of came into the game, but obviously could have easily gone 1-0 down because of his error, to be honest. And he had one or two more in that first half, I want to say. Tomiyasu in this game, I felt he grew into the game. He had a little bit stuttery, but he definitely looked defensively more assured, even if I felt he maybe looked a little, not leggy, but just a little bit, you know, agility coming back and things like that and just getting back to full fitness. And then obviously there's Zinchenko who came on in this game for 20 minutes. I mean, where are you at? I mean, is it more about sort of balancing who we should play, or are you more in the boat of kind of has to be Tomiyasu or Kivior for the big games now because of the maybe larger defensive vulnerability of Zinchenko?
I think Arteta got it right yesterday by playing the team that he started with. And then we were such in such control, we were able to afford to make so many key changes to our best players, if you like, to rest them for Sunday. I think it was perfect. I think his management of it yesterday didn't really matter for me who the subs were, because by that time the game had long gone. It was still about keeping a clean sheet, though. And did you see that bit where Gabriel let off this almost like a screech, like a banshee?
Loves it.
I thought, what the hell is that noise? But, you know, it was him.
He was just seeing the ball out for a goal kick, wouldn't he?
Yeah, I know, but this is what it means to them.
Yeah, it's great.
It's like, you know, we could be 20-0 up and they do not want to concede. And it goes to show because we've got the best defensive record, right? I mean, look, Reyes' clean sheet thing, the golden glove. There's some crazy stats, by the way. I just want to see. I don't know if you looked at the Arsenal website, but it's like, we've got 100 goals already in all competitions this season. Four games to go. Yeah, we've got that. They talk about Odegaard. What was the other thing? There was some really interesting stat here. Like, I can't be bothered to read all of it now because it looks stupid on the pod to do that. But there's some. If anyone wants to look, there's a part in the Arsenal website called Five Things We Noticed, and it's quite interesting reading actually. But one of them is we've already got our I think with the substitutions, I think he just managed it well. Because he took on all, you know, all the players we wanted to see rest. He took them all off and he gave those other players a chance. It's interesting, as you said before we start recording, I think, They didn't bring on Emil Smith Rowe or anyone like that. That's interesting. But he brought on Vieira. Vieira looked sharp. Jesus, again, he could have had a chance, a couple of chances, but he did do something which was spectacular. Did you see that pass where he wasn't even looking? He was kind of looking at the halfway line and he passed it back in. Who didn't finish it? I can't remember who. Was it to Martinelli or Havertz? No, it wasn't Havertz. Havertz was off. I don't know who it was.
I don't remember it, to be honest. Maybe I switched off a little bit at that point.
It was just brilliant. It was just what Jesus does. He did a couple of bits of trickery, which were like, oh my God. Wow, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, he has that little chop back that he does really well.
Yeah, just so good with it. You know, we could have scored another goal even with the substitutes on. Didn't Rice have a great chance?
He hit the post and that was offside.
Yeah.
Or then, something was offside. And then obviously the two from Martinelli, one from that late one. I don't know how he doesn't finish that really. Straight the goalkeeper. Makes it a bit too obvious opening his body up, I think. But yeah, we could have, you're right.
Even Vieira. Vieira was close. It was a great effort, wasn't it?
We
thought that it hit the side netting. So, you know, the substitutions for me, although there's probably not, I was so engrossed in the game in the 5-0, I wasn't even worried about the substitutes at that point. Yeah. I'm just glad that we made the changes to give them a rest, which we need. We need them to be, again, in prime form for Sunday. Now, I will say this, as good as and enjoyable as it until, you know, the end. We've got a lot more. Are you still there, Jack?
Yeah, sorry, you paused there. So you said it's good and enjoyable, and then I lost you. Sorry.
As good as enjoyable as yesterday is. And we've got to celebrate, of course. Because it wasn't long ago when Chelsea's were beating us 6-0, 5-0, humiliating us. We were getting, you know, laughed off the park for it. Men against boys, da-da-da-da-da. It's our time now. Remember all those quotes from the Chelsea players? Yeah. Well, it's our time now, Bob Sunshine. It's our time. Now it's men against boys the other way around. We made them look stupid as far as I'm concerned. So, again, I wasn't like too worried about focusing too much on the subs, but the fact that we were able to make them to rest our players for Sunday is so important because we have to be on it again, Jack. We have to do the same again. It's repeat, rinse and repeat, rinse and repeat for the next four games because we cannot afford one let up. Not one. We can't. A draw is not good enough. You know, it doesn't even matter, I think, even if Man City draw their next game against Brighton, we still got something that gives us the flexibility to draw one. We just have to win our next four games. And we have to be in prime position. And I think it needs to go with a team like a starting team like this. It's our best team. And I think you're right. I think rather than going just for, complete control, which we have done effectively because it shows with our defensive record, I think we've got to go with dominance as well because I think that's the way to approach these games, I think.
These have always been my concerns, this game and the United one, because so far this season we haven't really won a big away game. You know, I mean, if you think about the ones that we've played, Newcastle away, Villa away, Chelsea away, drew, lost there. Liverpool away, drew, you know, a good performance, but drew, City away, drew. But in all those performances, Neil, I think there's a little bit of a pattern in that. Other than maybe the Liverpool game, which we started really fast, but where we just went out there with, you know, the goal of not keeping it tight, we were still in control, but we weren't going out there to really take the initiative like we did, for example, in a lot of the home games where we go out and we really try to go full out and try to take the game to them and win the game, take the game to them, take that away from them. And I don't think in big away games he's quite got the balance right yet. And he has to change something in order for us to do that. I don't think he can go with the same approach. Now, is that a personnel thing, maybe? Or is it a mentality thing? Because obviously we do it in other games, so it could well be that. But I agree with you. I think Thomas Partey should start. It's just about how he recovers. We've got an extra day in a sense, but still, you know, we've had so many games thick and fast. Pep Guardiola moaning about a schedule that was 10 times better than ours at the weekend. He had extra days on every one of the games that he moaned about in comparison to ours. We played later. We played earlier in the next one. Da-da-da-da-da. So, you know, and obviously Spurs have had basically 2 weeks off come Sunday, which is incredible how they've matched that up, to be honest, how they've done that. You know, we've had, by the time we played them, we would have had four games since their last one. So that is quite incredible for someone, you know, obviously we had a 2 week break, but everyone did in that time. It was sort of the winter break, right? So it's incredible that just sort of one team gets such a break like that. But there's nothing you can do about it. Nothing we can do about it. No one's going to hear it. So I agree with you. We need to go there with a different approach. I would play Partey. I think after, if he does do that, I think there's a good chance he plays Jorginho, though, because, you know, law of averages state that Partey playing twice in a week, it wasn't something we were expecting a week or two ago. So, and then the other thing would be the left side. And I think Tomiyasu has to be the first choice at this point if he's fit. If, again, it's the same sort of concern with Partey. The one that you could see him changing is possibly left wing, though. There's a real argument to say, how can you change Trossard at this point? But there is also that argument that every now and then when you start Trossard, every now and then he goes missing when you start him, and he seems to be a more effective substitute. And you never really know when that game's going to crop up. And it's a hard one to judge, and it's, you don't really know. I mean, you're looking at this game, you probably watch it and think he's saving Martinelli for that game because there might be a little bit more transition. But I think Tottenham, he talked about the qualities of Chelsea. I wouldn't say Tottenham are a massive difference from Chelsea. They're very good going forward and they're very vulnerable defensively. And that's a bit like Chelsea, to be honest. And if you can win the midfield battle, then you've got a really good chance of getting at them, you know. So it's, but they obviously they're home, and it's going to be a very difficult game. There's no doubt about that. And they're a good team. They're fighting for Champions League, etc. But yeah, like you, Neil, it'll be very interesting to see the lineup. But I wouldn't be against going as is again if everyone's fit.
Yeah, me
too. I mean, after that performance, we'd be stupid not to say that, I guess. But I guess I could see. I'm less believing that we see changes at left back, but I could see, you know, the central midfield, if he doesn't believe Thomas Partey's ready because of this game, and then possibly the left wing. But I would really like to see Partey start, because I feel, he can adapt to different types of games a little bit better than Jorginho, whereas I feel like Jorginho's ability can sometimes be nullified a little bit. And sometimes, you know, it's easier for other teams to sort of lock him out of games because he doesn't quite have the physicality. He holds the ball a little longer. He plays sometimes the extra pass a little bit more, and it's hard for us to break quickly and things like that. So I would really like to see Partey start, if he's fit, of course, which you can never really say with Thomas Partey. So you just wait and see what the response is here a day or two later and all that kind of stuff. But just quickly, Neil, before we get your predictions on that sort of massive game, let's just quickly look at the goal difference on the table. So we have a 56 goal difference. Now, it's a bit not level, because obviously Liverpool and City have games in hand, but that is quite an incredible goal difference. I mean, that is a plus 56 goal difference. For any other season, with two teams not against us like Liverpool and City, you'd be saying we're kind of clear on goal difference at least, and whether that's going to matter or not, it may not. City win all their games, it will not. But that is, you know, I mean, City have two games in hand, but we still have a plus 12 on them, and now City can do anything in any game. But it's quite impressive to think that, you know, people a couple of weeks ago were arguing that we were too negative against Manchester City away. There's two negatives. I've never seen two negative teams score the most goals in the league by six currently. So that's difficult to be that negative when you're doing that, isn't it? So I just found that ridiculous. A few people saying that to me over the last week. Yeah, you thought you were too negative, City. I was like, absolutely ridiculous comment if you watched this all season. I mean, really ridiculous comment. But
I think it is going to be important. I've got a feeling it might be important, because it only takes City to draw one game, which could happen in the next one. And then they win their rest, and we win our rest. It's level points, Jack. So it is important. And I know City can turn that deficit around very quickly. You know, they could win one game 5-6-0. Do it again in the next game, but we've banged them already. We've already got them. We're ahead on points and goal difference. It's up to them to now do it. Now, I know they do it every blooming season, and they're so it's almost like the norm. You expect them, their last 10 games, to all be wins, to be devastating wins and whatnot. I just feel there's something slightly different about them this season, slightly. And it could be that they may struggle against the team. They've got Brighton away, haven't they? They've still got to play Tottenham, haven't they? Or am I wrong in that?
I can't take City and Liverpool's Tottenham's games that seriously, sadly.
No, you're right.
I just find it difficult.
You are right. But Tottenham have been a bit of a bogey team for them. And you never know. I mean, they're still fighting for fourth. I know you might think they're going to roll over for us. but they're against City, and they're going to give us a hard time. But they're still playing for Champions League. So, you know, I don't know, Jack. You know, it could be quite interesting. But I think the fact that we've got them, we've got back to them, or we're ahead, it is quite hard to think about, isn't it? When we, for all these years, we were so far behind the likes of City and Liverpool. Do you remember we used to talk about how the gap was just ridiculous? I remember Mark used to be on the pod, used to always say, we're light years behind them.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, the last 2 years, we've really closed that gap down. Yeah, we might still not be the finished article, but we're very, very, well, we're a lot closer than we were. And that, the credit's got to go to Arteta for that, for me. Got to. And Edu, by the way. You know, Edu doesn't get mentioned enough. In their scouting. Look, at we used to heavily criticise the signings. Out of, say, 10 signings, we'd think seven are a waste of space, weren't they? Now it's the other way around. It's hard to find a signing which hasn't been effective for us in the last, what, 2 seasons?
Yeah.
They're all coming good. They're all really effective. Kai could have been one where we're thinking, oh, we made a mistake. We have not made any mistake. Look at him. It's great. Kiwi, or I just think he's a little bit young. I think he's a bit inexperienced. He's a bit young. I think he's still got, there's a good player in Kai. He could have a good, have a future with us. But of course, you know, if we're going to jump ahead to next season, look at Timber. Oh, my God. Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, you saw him in midweek.
Oh, my God. Left back
role. I mean, I think that was his role, wasn't it? That was where he was going to play. When you talk about all our vulnerabilities and, you know, every week, left back is almost on the agenda to talk about, he would have solved that.
Unbelievable. And just again, before we talk about predictions, did we mention Kai's fourth goal? That was great. I think you did.
I said it was my favourite just because of the way he took the finish. Yes. You know, that little step to the ship and just cut back and hit it off the post. It was a sort of finish I didn't expect from him, you know, taking the shot early.
Yeah, it's not a Kai, right, kind of typical Kai goal, is it? But
no.
It's good that we saw it because it's like, it gives us a bit of confidence that he's actually got that in his locker as well. He let that ball kind of roll across him, didn't he? And he just readjusted. Yeah. But that was a Saka assist. I think that's the one that Saka assisted.
It was. Yeah, it was. And he just looked very confident at that point.
Yeah,
which is great. But what's your thoughts then on their goal before we get to our predict? I mean, obviously, you know, Liverpool are going to play tomorrow. Today for you and you know, I always feel like their derby, the Merseyside derby, is nothing in comparison. You know what I mean? Because maybe it's because Everton are where they are and things like that. But what's your thoughts? Everton and then Brighton, obviously, they're a tough team, but they're going through. Yeah. You know, we also went there a few weeks ago.
I would think that there's probably more chance of City dropping points than Liverpool. That's what I think.
Yeah.
I think, I you know, although Everton had that win, didn't they, against Forest, wasn't it? They had that one. Although they got the win and maybe they got a bit of their wind in their sail for it, and they should, in theory, be up for any derby. I think because Liverpool got that win against Fulham, which I thought, you know, at one point Fulham might do them because they were looking all right, and then all of a sudden the inevitable happened. I just think Liverpool are going to have too much for them. I'm not expecting anything from that one. I'm probably a little bit more hopeful with the Brighton City game. I don't know. Something's telling me that it's not going to... I think... Although everyone expected City to win and get past it, I don't think it's going to be as easy as all of that. And I think Brighton may upset the odds slightly. But we just don't know. At the end of the day, Jack, I think we've just got to focus on us.
We can't do anything else. I mean, obviously we dropped points, but, you know, since January, for example, our form has been pretty terrific, even with those dropped points. So... You can't, like you said, you can only focus on ourselves. And that's what we've done in the last two games, because no one's really played in the last, I mean, City haven't played in the last two games. So, you know, we put the pressure on. So.
Yeah. And the word on that, you know, we could have easily, our heads could have dropped. Heads could have dropped so easy after Villa and then Bayern, and they haven't. We've come back, and that's the difference between this season and last season, massively. So that tells me a lot about this team, the maturity, the mental levels, everything, even Arteta. You know, you've got to include Arteta in that.
Yeah.
He's not just, you know, he's trying to get something more out of the team after a real significant loss, a double loss, really. And we picked ourselves up because last season we just capitulated, Jack. That's all I want. No matter what happens, we can't help what City do, we can't help what Liverpool do. But as long as we take them to the last game of the season where we all have a chance to win it, that's all I want, because that's something we should have done last season and we didn't do it. We fell away too easily, too early, I think, because we were in control for so long. But that's the only thing we can hope for. Prediction wise,
go ahead.
I think it was on the Marcus spot that I predicted we'll beat Chelsea 4-1, so I wasn't too far off. So wow. I got 5 goals.
Positivity's coming through there. The optimism.
Yeah, man. So I ain't gonna stop there. You're gonna hate me for. Do you know what? I reckon we're gonna do 3-1. I think we're gonna do it. I think it's gonna be more comfortable than we think. But I think I'm just hopeful, Jack. I'm so excited, mate. 20 years, man. It's like the FIFA pitch. 18 years. It's 20 years, Jack. Come on.
Yeah. You know, but
3-1, and I'll say, oh, God, this is a hard one. I think I'm going to say defender. I'm going to go for Gabriel, 3-1.
Yeah, we haven't scored a set-piece goal for a while, have we?
Mm.
We haven't scored a set-piece goal in a little bit, so... you know, we went through that cluster of just scoring them all the time, and then they kind of, well, once they started to realise our plan of putting Trossard as a goalkeeper and things like that, then it looks like we have to come up with another one. But wow, I'd take that all day now. But it's such a tough game. Like I said, we got to change something. Big away games, not we've done bad necessarily in all of this season. I mean, against the big six, we have the best record, or top two in the big six out of the best record. So overall, fantastic. Big away games. Tottenham obviously very strong at home. But yeah, we got to go for it. So I'll go 2-1. Odegaard. I'll go 2-1. Odegaard. If we can.
Perfect.
This is the one. We've got to find a way. We've got to find a way. But
this is the one.
You know, like you said, look, let's watch the midweek games with a little bit of a. I don't know if you can ever relax. To be honest, at this point, I don't feel like I can relax at all. But you know, it could be a little bit, you know, you've played your midweek one, so I guess let's enjoy some football and watch it and get our fingers crossed until it all comes around again. So, but no, it was really good. I was very worried going into the Wolves one, particularly this one. I felt we would win. I felt if we got an early goal against Chelsea, their heads would drop and they'd lose discipline. And you've seen that across the season with them kind of thing, you know, young team, obviously. Lovely to see some of the stats on us though, isn't it? I mean, on this game, just our best ever recorded victory against Chelsea.
That is it. Yes.
Since 1986.
Recorded the best ever victory.
You're right, best ever. But their heaviest defeat was in 1986 from Queen's Park Rangers. Sorry, that was when, that tells you what Chelsea used to be like, their biggest ever defeat against Queen's Park Rangers. Yeah. We've won 3 London derbies this season by more than 5 goals. Palace, West Ham, Chelsea. We've got that incredible London derby record as well. We like the just ridiculous record. But we had 13 shots in the first half, 14 in the second half. They are the 2 highest shot totals in a half of football against Chelsea on record since 2003-2004, which was when we were unbeaten. So I presume we got that record as well, to be honest.
Keep them coming, Jack. Keep them coming. I love it.
Absolutely lovely. Kai Havertz became the first player to score a brace against Chelsea after leaving them, having previously played for the first ever player to do it. All lovely stuff.
The other thing is our 3 players, 3 signings, have scored against their former clubs. So you had Trossard against Brighton, Rice against West Ham, and now Havertz against Chelsea.
Yes. Lovely stuff. Yeah.
Love it.
They're doing up big games. Havertz is a big game player, and you can see that. So we need those, Neil. The big game players is what we really, really need, because in big games, you know, big moments, you might not get many of them. So you've got to be able to take them. Neil, it's been great. I know I ran too long. We're at Purely Arsenal FP. Sorry about not being on the podcast for a week or two. We didn't do it purposely because of the sort of bad couple of games we had, but we're back with a bang now, and hopefully back after Sunday. Keep our fingers crossed. We're at Purely Arsenal FP on Twitter, Purely Arsenal on YouTube. Type in there, click a subscribe button. It'll really help us out. And hopefully, be back after Sunday. Keep our fingers crossed for the North London Derby. 4 games to go. Gotta believe. Up the Arsenal.